Friends, we now go to the next chapter, the balance of trade as far as international trade is concerned. Now, to take this more on a practical level, by giving you a different example. You know, in your account, you have an income account and an expenditure account, right? So you have to always balance the income and expenditure accounts. If you have less income account and more of expenditure account, what will happen? You'll have negative, you have to borrow and steal. And therefore, it's always advisable that you earn more, spend less, so that you can save something for future. That is an ideal situation as far as what you would like to look at. This is the same situation as far as international finance is concerned. This chart which I am showing you at the very beginning, at the moment, don't look at it. Skip this chart. At the end of this lecture, after understanding the whole situation, come back and then study this. Let us look at the topics covered. Balance of trade. What is balance of trade? Exports versus imports. Then we look at trade partners, that is the international trade partners. We look at the concept of free trade. We will also look at the concept of trade barriers. And finally, what is the actual impact of balance of trade? Balance of trade is actually the difference between the value of a country's imports and exports over a given period of time. It is one of the largest components of a country's balance of payments, that is, balance of international payments. Economics use this balance of trade to measure the relative strength of a country's economy as a whole. How? If a country exports a greater value than it imports, it has a trade surplus or a positive trade balance. Whereas if a country imports a greater value than it exports, it has got a deficit or a negative trade balance. What is good? Surplus or deficit? Positive or negative? That is a question which economics measure to give them to understand the strength of the country's economy. A country with a large trade deficit borrows money very heavily to pay for its goods and services, while a country with a large trade surplus lends money to deficit countries. You become a money lender if you are exporting more. Debit items include imports, foreign aid, domestic spending abroad, and domestic investments abroad. On the other hand, credit items include export, foreign spending in the domestic country, and foreign investments in the domestic economy. By subtracting the credit items from the debit items, economists arrive at a trade deficit or a trade surplus for a given country over a period of time. This is the basic method of calculation. Let us look at the factors that affect the balance of trade. One, cost of production. That is your land, your labor, the capital used, the taxes that are being paid, the incentives that you are required to give, and similar other items. They all go into the cost of production. In the exporting economy, vis-a-vis those in the importing economy. In the importing economy, you don't incur this. You only sell the goods ultimately. And the cost and availability of raw materials, intermediate goods and other inputs, currency exchange rate movements, these are all factors which affect the balance of trade. Multilateral trade, bilateral trade, and unilateral taxes or restrictions on trade, they do affect balance of trade. Non-tariff barriers such as environmental, health, or safety standards, availability of adequate foreign exchange with which to pay for imports. If you have less foreign exchange to pay for import, you will have to borrow at a particular rate and pay interest on that. Prices of goods manufactured at home influenced by the responsiveness of the supply. Of course, the monetary balance of trade is different from the physical balance of trade, which is expressed in the amount of raw materials known as total material consumption. Developing countries usually import. The developed countries import a substantial amount of raw material from developing countries. We are developing countries. We are exporting our raw material to developed countries. And developed countries transform these raw materials, and we bring it back as finished products. And they export it after adding value to the products. Most developed countries have a large physical trade deficit. Why? Because they consume more raw materials than they produce. Why? There are two factors. Number one, the raw material that goes into the country is partly used to produce goods for their local consumption and partly used for producing goods for export. Developed countries have got a large consumption level. That is the reason why there is a deficit. There are trade barriers because of these reasons. Most countries prefer to apply trade barriers which work on the basic principle of imposition of some sort of cost, money, time, bureaucracy, quota on trade that raises the price of availability of the traded products. There are several types of tariffs and barriers that a government can employ. One, specific tariffs, that is specific duties. Another, ad valorem or percentage of rate based duties. Then there are licenses, there are import quotas, there are voluntary export restraints, restraining export of goods, and a compulsory local content requirements. Most of the governments apply this local content requirements, and this acts as a trade barrier. Each country will have their own unique set of circumstances for building up a trade surplus. One, export-oriented growth. Some countries have set out to increase the capacity of their export industries as a growth strategy. Yes, we have done it. In India, we have done it. Another aspect is foreign direct investment. Strong export growth can be the result of a high level of foreign direct investment coming into India, where foreign affiliates establish their production plants and then export from this base. Here in India, our Prime Minister, Mr. Manmohan Singh, has given a very strong concept of Make in India, where foreign investors have been asked to come to India, set up production plants in India and sell a part of it in India and then export from this base. This is our Make in India concept, and high domestic savings rates. Some economics attribute current account surplus to high levels of domestic savings and low domestic consumption of goods and services. China has a high household saving ratio and a huge trade surplus. Critics of countries with persistent trade surpluses argue that they should do more to expand their domestic demand to boost world trade. China is not doing it. They are not expanding their domestic demand. Closed economy. Some countries have a low share of national income taken up by imports. Why? Because the economy is closed. Because of a range of tariff and non-tariff barriers. And of course, strong investment incomes from overseas investments. Investment in new capital provides the means by which economies of scale can be exploited, unit costs driven down, and comparative advantage can be developed. A part of current account that is often overlooked at many times is the return that the investor gets from purchasing the assets overseas. It might be the profits coming from home, from the foreign subsidiaries of multinational business, or the interest from money held on overseas account, or the dividends from taking equity stakes in foreign companies. These are all part of the current account incomes. How does this affect the GDP, gross domestic product? Exports directly increase and imports directly reduce a nation's balance of trade, that is net exports. Goes as I explained before, trade surplus is a positive net balance of trade and trade deficit is a negative net balance of trade. Due to balance of trade being explicitly added to the calculation of the nation's GDP, the trade surplus are contributions and trade deficits are drags upon the nation's GDP. Trade deficits generated in tradable goods such as manufactured goods or software may impact the domestic employment to different degrees than do trade deficits in raw material. Why? Because you are paying a higher value addition, a higher savings rate generally corresponds to a trade surplus. And that helps the GDP. When we look at the currency exchange factor for international trade, exchanging one currency with another form of currency of another country, there is an international clearing union. This was proposed as a global bank that would issue its own currency, that is the banker. Every country would have an overdraft facility in its banker account. And this would have a fixed exchange rates, exchangeable with national currencies. It could also be used to measure a country's trade deficit or trade surplus. New system is not founded on free trade, but rather on regulation of international trade in order to eliminate trade imbalances. The nations with the surplus would have a powerful incentives to get rid of it. The surplus that you have got, you have an incentive to get rid of it. And in doing so, they would automatically clear another nation's deficit. Borrow and lend factor. Monetarists have got a different theory altogether. It was argued by monetarists that the national trade deficit was an indicator of a successful economy. This is the reverse theory. A successful growing economy would result in greater trade deficits. An unsuccessful shrinking economy would result in lower trade deficits. Now, this is the reverse of the previous theory. Some of the concerns of trade deficits are unfair criticisms in an attempt to push macroeconomic policies favorable to exporting industries. Trade deficits are not necessarily important, as high exports could raise the value of the currency, thus in the long run reducing exports and vice versa for imports. So the theories are differing from time to time. You want to look at trade partners. What are trade partners? Trade partners are countries with whom we do business on a regular basis. They become our trade partner, we become their trade partners in international trade. According to the data of the Commerce Ministry in 2018-19, bilateral trade between the US and India stood at US$87.95 billion. And during the same period, India's two-way commerce with China aggregated to US$87.07 billion. Yes, both of them are approximately similar. That means we traded virtually on an equal basis with America and China. But here, in both these cases, we were trade partners, but our trading method was very, very different. In the case of America, we have exported more, imported less. In the case of China, we have imported more and exported less. This is the basic difference, though the overall figure is similar in both the cases. The two largest goods traded by India are mineral fuels, refined or unrefined, and gold, that is finished goldware or gold metal. Counting the European Union as one, WTO ranks India fifth for commercial service exports and 6th for commercial services import. And two main destinations of exported Indian merchandises are the European market, European Union market, and the American market. Whereas the two main markets of origin, that is for import of goods into India, are China and European Union market. Yes, between the European Union and India, we virtually have a similar equality in imports and exports, virtually matching, very little difference in the balance of trade. Free trade. You know, there are different trade policies. One is free trade and one is controlled trade. World Trade Organization, WTO, and other developed countries are insisting that we have a free trade policy. No, it does not mean giving goods freely away. No. It means that it does not restrict imports or exports. Buyers and sellers from different economies may trade without a government applying tariffs, that is duties, quotas or licenses, subsidies or prohibitions on goods and services. Free trade is the opposite of trade protectionism or economic isolationism. Most members today, most nations today are members of the World Trade Organization's multilateral trade agreements, creating free trade areas between groups of countries by agreement creates a protectionist barrier between that free trade area and the rest of the world. So partial trade agreements hurts certain countries and benefits certain countries. WTO is trying to control this. Most governments will impose some sort of protectionist policies to support their local employment, giving employment to the locals is very much need of the hour, and therefore governments will impose protectionist policies to the industry. Governments may also restrict free trade to limit exports of natural resources. Today, our Indian government policy started very shortly by an announcement by our Prime Minister Dr. Manmohan Singh: stop export of natural resources, but export value-added products in the form of consumer goods and services. Other barriers that may hinder trade include import quotas, taxes, non-tariff barriers, like regulatory legislation of the different countries, the controls of different countries. Of course, there is a broad consensus amongst economics that protectionism has a negative effect on economic growth and economic welfare, while free trade and reduction of trade barriers have a positive effect on economic growth. Of course, different groups of economists have got different views on both these situations. Liberalization of trade can cause significant and unequal distributed losses and the economic dislocation of workers in import competing sectors. Free trade, it aims trade of goods without taxes or tariffs or other trade barriers. In service, trade in service also without taxes or other trade barriers. Absence of these trade distorting policies such as taxes, subsidies, regulations or laws that give some firms, households or factors of production an advantage over others. Unregulated access to markets. Unregulated access to market information. These are all the aims of free trade. Inability of firms to distort markets through government-imposed monopoly or oligarchy power. And trade agreements which encourage free trade. Let us again come back to our trade barriers. Any restriction imposed on free flow of trade is a trade barrier. They are government-induced restrictions on international trade. And most trade barriers work on principles of imposition of cost, time, money, etc., etc., on trade that raises prices of availability of traded products. If two or more nations repeatedly use these barriers against each other, then a trade war results. That is what we are seeing today between America and China. These barriers take form of tariffs, which impose a financial burden on imports. America has started doing it. Non-tariff, which uses other means to restrict imports and occasionally exports. Yes, China has also started doing this. America has also started doing this. They have raised their barrier levels to a very high extent, virtually going on a tit-for-tat basis. It's really a trade war, yes. High-income countries, they would prefer to have less trade barriers than middle-income countries, which in turn will try to have less trade barriers than low-income countries. Now, there is a difference of views that income differences is because of trade barriers, or trade barriers will improve the income differences between various countries. Again, small states tend to have lower trade barriers than large states. Look at Singapore. Singapore has got the least trade barriers. A single point basic minimum tariff for duty. It's very minimized. Of course, most common trade barriers by different countries are on agricultural goods and secondary it comes to textiles, apparels and footwears, which are manufactured goods and which are mostly protected by trade barriers. Now, why do I bring forward these three products? These three types of products form the basic required by the consumers, by the citizens of any country. These are the basic necessities, and therefore countries apply trade barriers to protect the necessities, the necessary requirements as far as their citizens are concerned. Question is it good, bad or worse? No, each country argues that they need this kind of barriers on such products. Of course, tariffs have been declining in the last 20 years or so due to WTO, because states have increased the use of non-tariff barriers for various other types of products. What are the reasons for tariff barriers? First, they are created to protect infant industries and developing countries, but are also used by more advanced countries or advanced economies with developed industries. Here, there are five top reasons where tariff is used. One, protecting domestic employment, that is job opportunities. Possibility of increased competition from imported goods can threaten the domestic industries. And these countries may shift their production abroad to cut costs, which means higher unemployment in that country. Protecting consumers. A government may levy a tariff on products that it feels could endanger its population, like the food products I told you before. For example, South Korea may place a tariff on imported beef from United States if it thinks that the goods could be tainted with a disease. They are always afraid of diseased foodstuffs. Infant industries. Yes, virtually all countries, they use tariffs to protect infant industries in the guise of import substitution industrialization strategy. And virtually all developing countries adopt this ISI strategy in some sector or the other. Government of developing economy will levy tariffs on imported goods in particular industries to foster growth. And fourth, of course, national security is forming a very big reasons, especially by America after the Twin Tower tragedy. Barriers have been employed by developed countries to protect industries that are strategically important for national security of that country. And defense industries are definitely viewed as vital to state interests and often enjoy significant levels of protection. Next, we have retaliation. Countries may also set tariffs as a retaliation technique if they feel that a trading partner has not played by the rules. Non-tariff barriers are import licensing. One of the most common non-tariff barriers is the prohibition or restriction on imports maintained through import licensing requirements. You cannot import the goods unless the government gives you a license to import them. Of course, we in India, we maintain a very small negative list of imported products subject to various forms of non-tariff regulations. Some products which cannot be imported at all, totally banned. Another small group of products which can be imported subject to certain regulatory requirements. So the negative list is prohibited items, restricted items, and of course canalized items, that is imported through government agencies. The next non-tariff barrier, we have standards of testing, labeling and certification. Our government has identified 109 commodities that must be certified by Bureau of Indian Standards. That is BIS regulatory standards. FSSAI, Food Safety and Standards Authority of India, is a statutory body for laying down standards for articles of food and regulating manufacturing, processing, distribution, sale and imports of all food products. This is an Ontario barrier. Anti-dumping and countervailing measures. If certain country feels that goods are being dumped on that country and it is hurting the local industry, local economy, then they apply anti-dumping duty. That means duty more than the prevalent rate of duty. And this is allowed by WTO agreements. Basic reason is to stop serious injury to our own country and products or economy. Of course, India imposes these from time to time to protect domestic manufacturing, all these kinds of any type of dumping. Then there is export subsidies and domestic support. Several export subsidies and other domestic support is provided to several industries to make them competitive internationally. Export in India, export earnings are exempt from taxes, and exporters are not subject to the local manufacturing tax. Well, thank you.